Since November 1947, for over 63 years, Palestine has been under a cruel and illegal occupation by Israel, the longest-lasting military occupation in modern history. Millions of Palestinians are impoverished and humiliated on a daily basis by the Israeli Defense Forces, Israel's state security apparatus, colonists, and anyone else wishing to join in on the degradation of an entire people. How long will this insanity be allowed to continue? Since our so-called leaders seem to be unable, or more likely unwilling, to end the Palestinians' long nightmare, can we, average citizens, help? The answer is a resounding yes. My next guest has a plan, and with your help, Palestinian misery can end. Joining me on the phone today is Rebecca Vilcomerson, the Executive Director of Jewish Voice for Peace. Rebecca, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Rebecca, what is Jewish Voice for Peace?
We're a diverse and democratic grassroots membership organization nationally. We're inspired by Jewish tradition to build a movement for a just peace based on human rights, equality, and international law for all the peoples of Israel and Palestine.
Okay. Can you give our listeners a brief history of Jewish Voice for Peace? And can I refer to it as JVP? Is that all right?
Absolutely. That's how we all refer to it.
Okay, great.
JVP began in the Bay Area of California, actually all the way back in 1996, and that was a bit before my time. But they were active for a few years in the late 90s and then really got started again in the sort of current incarnation around the time of the Second Intifada. So around the year 2000, the group became very active again, sort of as a regional organization in the Bay Area that was very, very active. And I became involved myself as a member around 2001, 2002. And then in 2005, we made a decision to become a national organization, and we've been slowly growing ever since,
Right.
And now we have about 15 chapters around the country.
Wow. How large is your membership or people who are involved in JVP?
Well, we have about 100,000 supporters on our email list, and those are all people who have taken one of the actions that we've asked them to take online. So that's the sort of big, broad base. We have over 4,000, I haven't counted recently, but the last count, over 4,000 folks who are supporting us financially.
Wow, that's big. And you're also on Facebook, is that right?
We're also on Facebook, and we're up to about 7,300 members, and we're growing, you know, at a really incredible clip. That's actually a new Facebook page, and we're putting on a regular week, we're adding about 100 people a week. But you know, during the weeks, for example, after the flotilla, we added about a 1,500 members in just about a week.
Wow.
So depending on what's going on internationally, we sometimes have bigger growth.
Right, I can see that, because we spoke a week ago. You were at 7,200. Now you're at 7,300. So that's 100.
Exactly.
A week,
so yeah,
right?
Exactly. 100 a week. Yeah.
And how many people are doing this? How many people work full time for Jewish Voice for Peace?
Well, we have 5 full-time paid staff members, but really one of the reasons that we managed to get so much done is because we have just an incredible base of volunteer activists, and some of them are really putting in, if not full-time jobs, almost full-time amounts of work into the work that we do. So, you know, we do have the five paid staff, but then we have a lot of volunteers all over the country who we just simply couldn't do the work without, who just do incredible work for us.
That sounds great. So what do you guys do exactly?
Well, our leading campaign right now is a campaign that we just debuted two weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
Which is to get TIA CREF, which is the largest pension fund, one of the largest pension funds in the United States, to divest from occupation-related industries. So there's 5 companies in particular that we're asking TIA CREF to divest from that we're using sort of as examples, and those are Caterpillar, Motorola, Northrop Grumman, Elbit, and Veolia. But in fact, TIA CREF holds over 30, I believe, companies that have investments or either profiting from or helping to maintain the occupation. So we're asking them to create a new screen for themselves that would have them divest from any companies that are engaging in these activities. And that's because TIA CREF defines itself, its sort of tagline is finance for the greater good. So we're really just asking TIAA-CREF to hold itself to its own standards. So that's our largest campaign. Each of our chapters also do local work. So depending on what's happening in local areas, folks do education and outreach in their local communities. They build relationships with their local legislators. They are present at local film festivals. There's different projects depending on where folks are around the country. And then we have do a lot of work of solidarity with Israeli and Palestinian peace organizations. So we've done a lot of, for example, in the last year, we've done a lot of mini campaigns around supporting, for example, the Shministim. Those are the 18-year-old Israelis
sure.
who refuse to go to the army, and some of them go to jail. And so we've done a lot of support work for them, and we've done a lot of support work for members of the Bilin is a small village in the West Bank, and so some of them have been in jail for quite a long time without even any charges, and so we've done a lot of solidarity work for them to get them out of jail. And so, you know, we're trying to support the Israeli and Palestinian peace movements.
Right. Now, earlier you mentioned the Intifada, and that's uprising, is that right?
In Arabic, correct.
Right, that's what that translates to, uprising. And TIAA-CREF, of course, is the Teachers Insurance an Annuity Association College Retirement Equities Fund, and they're one of the largest financial services companies in the United States. I think they have like about $400 billion under assets. Now, you said Caterpillar, Motorola, and a couple other companies. What's wrong with these companies? Why do you want TIAA-CREF to not do business with them?
Well, each of them, I think, you know, these are companies that are indicative of what we're concerned about, that TIAA-CREF is profiting off of occupation-related industries. So just to take Caterpillar as an example, Caterpillar sells armored bulldozers made to the specifications of the Israeli army, and it's Caterpillar bulldozers that you see all over the West Bank. I've seen them myself, that are destroying homes and destroying orchards. It was a Caterpillar bulldozer that killed Rachel Corrie back in 2003. So there's a long history of Caterpillar being, you know, it's really not a bulldozer like you'd see on a farm.
Armored.
Weapon of war.
Right.
A weapon of war.
Yeah. Right.
Another interesting example is Elbit, which is, you know, and Caterpillar is an American firm. Elbit is an Israeli firm, and they create a lot of the security components for the wall, which separates Israeli and Palestinian territory, and in fact goes deep into Palestinian territory. And what's interesting about them is they actually are doing the same in the wall that's being built between the United States and Mexico. So we've
wow.
started to create some very interesting partnerships with groups in New Mexico and Arizona who are very concerned about the sort of militarization of the border between us and Mexico. So, you know, there's all kinds of really interesting, you know, each of the companies has its own story and its own piece that they're contributing to. Northrop Grumman, of course, is a well-known military contractor, and they're certainly, you know, providing military equipment to probably to bad actors all over the world. Most recently, there were parts from Northrop Grumman that were part of the attack on the flotilla in the waters off of Gaza.
Right.
So, you know, these are some of the best examples of the ways that companies are implicated in the occupation, which is completely illegal according to international law.
Right, and you said that you've actually seen these bulldozers. How did you see them?
Well, I lived in Israel from 2006 to 2009, and during that time I was living in Tel Aviv with my family. My husband is Israeli, and so that's how we ended up being there. And at that time, I wasn't working for Jewish Voice for Peace. I was a very active member when I lived in the Bay Area, but I wasn't working for JVP as a staff person then. And I worked for a Jewish Bedouin environmental rights organization, and I worked for a Palestinian Israeli think tank. But in my other spare time, you know, I did the stuff that most of the Israeli left does. So I was going to places like Bilin and participating in the demonstrations there. I was, you know, really all over I had the opportunity to travel all over the West Bank and East Jerusalem, not Gaza, because that's off limits to folks in Israel, but to all over East Jerusalem and the West Bank. And I saw a lot of stuff there that I had read about for many, many years, but it doesn't compare to what it's like to see it personally.
Actually see it, yeah. So you're Jewish?
I'm Jewish, yes.
Okay. And the membership, not the membership, but the staff, are they Jewish also?
Yep. All of our staff is Jewish. All of our board is Jewish. We actually welcome members who are not Jewish, who believe in our mission. But you know, we are a Jewish, as the mission statement says, sort of, and we're inspired by Jewish tradition, and we are primarily a Jewish organization.
And you work with church groups also, don't you?
We've done some, yes, we build all kinds of coalitions with all kinds of different groups, and so we have worked closely with the Presbyterians and the Methodists, for example, both of whom have been at the forefront of trying to divest from Caterpillar. For example, Caterpillar has been a target for a long time, and in fact, before our TIA CREF campaign, our biggest campaign, which we had started in 2005, was actually a shareholder responsibility campaign, which was trying to get some of the inside Caterpillar to stop supplying bulldozers to the Israeli army. And so we had a lot of close church partners, for example, in that effort.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you being Jewish, you were from Israel. You probably have a lot of friends over there in Israel. How do they take your actions here? What do they think of what you're doing?
Well, you know, I have not only friends, but family. And so it's not, you know, I have a very, very strong group of friends from the time that I lived there. Those friends, as it happens, share my politics. So that wasn't a problem. You know, my children went to Israeli schools. And so I spent a lot of time with, you know, I guess what you would call as, you know, regular Israelis. I don't know how else to put it. And it wasn't easy. I mean, there were definitely days that, for example, I would have been at a demonstration. I could have been tear gassed, perhaps. I would see people who had been shot with rubber bullets, that sort of thing. I would come home, wash the tear gas off me in the shower, rush to pick up my child from her school, and her little best friend, her father was in the army, and so he would come up to pick up his daughter in his army uniform. And, you know, so there was one of the strangest things about being in Israel is just how small it is and how close it is. And so people, you know, can commute back and forth to doing their army service. There were people during the Gaza war, and there were people who were literally commuting back and forth to the war. So there's a real, but what's interesting is that most Israelis don't engage at all at this point in what's happening in the occupied territories. So I would say the majority of people I knew, with the exception of the activists, had never been to the West Bank or had never been to East Jerusalem or had only been there during their army service, which, of course, was a very different experience entirely, and they were terrified. And to them, it was this foreign land that was so far away, when in fact, it's really only a few kilometers away from anyone anywhere in Israel. And nothing is more than a few kilometers away, really. So the sort of sense of disengagement and turning inward and fear that people had about what would happen. I remember the first activity I did when I first came to Israel was I started driving Palestinian children who needed very serious medical attention. I started driving them from the West Bank to hospitals in Haifa. They got special permits and were being treated in the Haifa hospital. And I got so much, so people were so worried about me, my husband's family and his friends and all these people. Everyone was telling me how dangerous it was for me to drive to the West Bank. And, you know, I wasn't scared at all. But after, you know, people were telling me, you know, I started to be a little nervous myself. But then, you know, I was like, well, I'm doing this. And I did it. And of course, it couldn't have been more lovely. So there's a lot of fear there, a lot of, you know, I think truly misplaced fear, and the fear feeds on itself and it also becomes aggression. So it's very difficult because people, despite the fact that they're so close and in fact that they're so intertwined, people have completely distanced themselves from the situation, and the fact that they are, you know, can be living in Tel Aviv, but that just a few miles away, that people are being completely oppressed and behind this wall and unable to move and unable to get the health care they need, for example, because of Israeli policies.
Right. So there's only a small group of Israelis who are interested in peace, you're saying?
Well, you know, it depends how you define peace. Certainly the left that's willing to come out and demonstrate is very small right now. And it's small certainly compared to what you saw, for example, in the early 1980s, in the first Lebanon war after Sabra and Shatila. You know, there were demonstrations of 400,000 people in Rabin Square. It's nothing like that. There's a small, incredibly dedicated, I have never met activists like the activists I met in Israel, but so a very small but extremely dedicated group of folks who have more or less committed their lives to doing this work. And then I would say there's a wider circle of people who will come out occasionally, and that might be 10 to 20,000 people. That's mm-hmm. my sort of guess.
Right.
And then, yeah, I would say most other people are not involved at all. I mean, a lot of people will say they want peace, but they're not willing to sort of change their lives around to make that happen. And unfortunately, because of the role that the settlers play in Israeli society, who are so committed and are willing to do just about anything to take over and settle the West Bank and
right.
Jerusalem, the folk just apathetic and not doing anything are, in my opinion, part of the problem.
Right, and sometimes they actually do anything to get what they want. Including,
absolutely. That's right. Yeah.
Murder.
Yeah.
Yeah. And have you been called anti-Semitic or a self-hating Jew?
You know, I've been called for sure both of those things. You know, that sort of insult I can actually laugh off.
Are you anti-Semitic?
Yeah, I mean, I find it to be a crazy question. I grew up in a synagogue. I was bat mitzvahed. I was confirmed. I was brought up in a synagogue that my grandparents founded. I have an Israeli husband. I have an Israeli children. I lived in Israel for 3 years. There are many things about it that I enjoyed very, very much. I belong to a synagogue now. I don't think, I do this work out of the deepest principles that I think that I learned from Judaism. I feel it's an essential part of my Jewish identity that I'm doing this work. And so, you know, I feel very confident in my Jewish identity. And so, you know, those kind of insults I find to be sort of gratuitous. I think what's
right.
really problematic is that there are lots of people who are doing this work who are Jewish but maybe are not as connected to the Jewish community or the Israeli community, or non-Jews who are doing this work for the exact same reasons as I am, and that these insults are used as a way to sort of muzzle dissent, and keep people silent, even though they're legitimately concerned about the actions that Israel is taking.
Right, exactly. Let me make mention real quick that the website is JewishVoiceForPeace.org, and there's also two, I guess you can call them sister websites. There's MuzzleWatch.com, like a muzzle on a dog, and TheOnlyDemocracy.org. Now, we were talking about Tia Kreff and divesting from the Israeli occupation. Now, Tia Kreff, as I said earlier, they're one of the largest financial service companies in the United States with, I think about $400 billion in assets under management or more. Now, Tia Kreff actually responded to JVP's request that they divest from these companies, didn't they?
They did. They've already put out a press release.
Folks can see it on the internet if they go to Tia Kreff's website. I have it in front of me. It says, and this is, of course, June 24th, so a week ago, and this is their statement on request by Jewish Voice for Peace. While Tia Kreff acknowledges participants' varying views on Israeli and Palestinian policies and the Gaza Strip and West Bank, we are unable to alter our investment policy in accordance with those views. Our responsibility to earn a competitive financial return on the retirement savings entrusted to us by 3.7 million participants obliges us to invest in a diverse lineup of companies across all sectors of the global economy. Rebecca, it sounds like what they're saying is that they're more interested in earning a competitive financial return than in the lives of people. Am I wrong about that? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is what they're saying. I mean, I think, you know, this is, we conceptualize this campaign. This is a big campaign, and we're not expecting to win it anytime. You know, we didn't expect that we would submit this petition with 300 prominent names, and that TIFF would say, oh, good idea, you're right. And of course, one of the things about doing these divestment campaigns is, unlike, for example, in the case of South African apartheid, there's
right.
a very, very strong, organized, wealthy group of people and organizations who are going to very strongly fight us on this.
And many of them are Jewish, right?
And many of them, exactly, the strongest of them are Jewish. So, like, you know, AIPAC and the all the Jewish community federations and all those sorts of what you would call the mainstream Jewish organizations, which is actually, you know, sort of, when you say mainstream, I would put that in quotes, because I think we are not the mainstream at JVP, but we are certainly a significant stream of the Jewish community. And one of the things that the mainstream Jewish communities have managed to do is to sort of speak for the entire Jewish community when I don't think they actually represent so they certainly don't represent all of us, and they don't represent many of us. But you know, that's going to be a very strong fight, and I wouldn't expect TIAA-CREF to say, oh yeah, great idea, that's what we're going to do. So I don't think it's surprising that this was their response. I actually find it rather encouraging that even 1 week after we had launched the campaign, they already found it necessary to to release a press, you know, to do a press release and explain why they're not doing it. So I actually think that shows that they realize that they're that this is a very serious campaign, and I think they're going to realize that more and more as we grow more and more. So, you know, I think this is now the real start of the campaign, and our responsibility and the responsibility of people who are interested in justice in Israel and Palestine to sort of step up and to show TIAA-CREF that we're really serious, and to keep on growing the movement and keep on growing the number of people who have endorsed the campaign. And this will be their argument until the cost to them is not worth it to them. So, you know, so yes, I totally agree with you. You know, I find this language surprising, but also not surprising, but you know, somewhat disappointing that, you know, again, with the tagline "Finance for the Greater Good," that they're basically saying it's most the most important thing is that we make money, and it doesn't matter what human rights or international laws are being violated. But you know, this is a corporation, it's a business. This is what you would expect from them, and our responsibility is to keep on making noise until they can't ignore us.
And you're going to make noise for a couple of years, aren't you? What's this campaign's timeline look like?
You know, we can imagine this campaign going 3 to 5 years. You know, it's not going to end overnight. It'll be interesting to see how long it takes. It might take less than that. And the only reason I say that is because campaigns, you know, in the United States, we're quite behind Europe, for example.
Right.
And so Deutsche Bank just divested itself from Beat, one of our target companies. Several pension funds, Norway, Sweden, have divested themselves also from Elbit. Veolia is a European company, a French company, and the main reason they're being targeted is because they had initially there's a road called Road 443, which is called the apartheid road because it is open only to Israelis, not to Palestinians, despite the fact that it goes through Palestinian land, and so they're involved with the Road 443 still. But they had also had a contract to build a light rail between Jerusalem and the Jerusalem settlements, which people like to call the Jerusalem suburbs, to ignore the fact that the settlements are actually being built in Palestinian territory.
Right.
And the fact that they had that contract actually meant that they lost $10 billion in contracts in Europe because European countries found that unacceptable. So, and that all happened over the course of 2 months. So I don't expect this campaign to be over in 2 months. Like I said, there's very, very strong forces against us. This is the first, as far as we know, the first major divestment campaign in the United States. So,
right.
I expect it to be a year or two, and probably more like 3 to 5 years at least. But maybe it could be a little bit faster, because I do think things are changing very rapidly in this movement, and it's growing, gathering strength from day to day.
And of course, that's boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and that's known as BDS. So this is the first major BDS campaign in the United States, then.
Well, I don't think so. There's been a campaign to boycott Ahava products that's being led by Code Pink. That is nationwide and has been doing. It's about a year old and it's doing quite well. But that's a boycott campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been quite a number of successful efforts on individual campuses to divest from certain companies, American and Israeli, that are propping up the occupation. But as far as we know, this is the first national divestment campaign.
Okay. Right.
And what one of the things that's great about it, I think, is that any folks anywhere in the country can get involved with this campaign. There's work to be done locally everywhere. Most universities use TIAA-CREF as their preferred pension fund for faculty and staff. A lot of medical centers do. A lot of high school teachers and other teachers in private schools use TIAA-CREF, a lot of nonprofits and arts organizations. So in every community, you're going to find institutions which are using TIAA-CREF where folks can get involved. And of the companies that we're targeting, a lot of them have offices around the country. So we actually, I'm not sure if it's up yet, but on the website soon there will be a map available for folks to look for where the offices are for the various companies and for TIAA-CREF, that they'll be able to think about how to do their, you know, creative local campaigning. And no matter what, they can look and find out, you know, you can start finding out what universities use TIAA-CREF. So using New York as an example, where I am, mm-hmm. Columbia uses TIAA-CREF, NYU uses TIAA-CREF, St. John's uses TIAA-CREF, the whole CUNY system uses TIAA-CREF. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, universities alone and what I know off the top of my head. So, you know, there's a, just everywhere you go, there's folks who are using TIAA-CREF. And so that's, it's really nationwide, and folks locally can do the work locally and the organizing locally, and it's a great public education opportunity. But then they're going to be able to be hooking into and scaling up to an impact nationally.
Mm-hmm. Now, BDS, boycotts, divestment, and sanction. You were telling me last week you're reading a book about BDS, and it has a long history, doesn't it?
Yeah, not by that name. The book I'm reading is by Adam Hochschild. It's called Bury the Chains, and what it's actually about is the campaign in England in the late 1700s against the slave trade.
Mm-hmm.
And at its height, there were, and this is something I certainly had no idea of before, at its height, there were 300,000 people who were boycotting using sugar, sugar that came from the slave trade, and eventually that made the slave trade illegal. You know, they were successful in getting the slave trade to become illegal in England. Certainly, BDS tactics have a very long and storied and noble history in citizens' movements throughout history. So, you know, more recently, you can think about the boycott in Arizona that's happening now because people are unhappy about the anti-immigrant legislation, or you could think about Cesar Chavez and lettuce, or the bus boycott in Montgomery, Alabama, or Gandhi salt boycott. And of course, South Africa is probably the example that has the most resonance to what we're talking about today. But, you know, this is a way that people, citizens, mm-hmm. And I use the word citizens in sort of the fullest participant sense of the word, not just someone who votes once every 4 years, but that people who want their government's policies to change and want to have a way of being personally showing and being part of a movement that's encouraging its government to change its policies can use boycott, divestment, and sanction tactics to make change happen. So I think, you know, it's a very exciting strategy been proven to be successful that can be applied to the situation in Israel and Palestine today. What we're looking for right now is folks to sign on to a petition asking TIAA-CREF to divest, and we've gotten about 5,500 folks who have signed on in the last 10 days, as you said. And yeah, we are in the middle of a fundraising campaign right now, and so we had a donor offer a $25,000 match because he was so excited about the TIAA-CREF campaign, so that's exciting also. But really, you know, what we're looking for right now is people to put their names on this petition and say that, yes, you know, we're joining you and asking TIAA-CREF to divest, and most especially we're asking people who are TIAA-CREF participants who have money invested in TIAA-CREF for their pension funds to ask TIAA-CREF, their pension fund, to divest. And I do want to emphasize, you know, TIAA-CREF is not the enemy here. What we're asking for, you know, we think of these companies that they're invested in as doing some really, really bad things. We think that TIAA-CREF has the potential to do the right thing. They've actually recently divested from several companies doing business in the Sudan as the result of a multi-year campaign that was conducted. And so, you know, we think TIAA-CREF eventually, if we can convince them, will do the right thing. And so TIAA-CREF is not the enemy. We're not asking people to divest from TIAA-CREF. We're asking people to ask TIAA-CREF to hold to its own standards and
right.
to create a new screen for how they do investing.
You mentioned something about a $25,000 match. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, sure. I think people have been looking for a long time for a campaign that folks can get involved in locally and that has the potential to have a real impact. And I think we've really hit on the right one in this TIAA-CREF campaign. So yeah, we have launched a little fundraising drive right now because we did get an individual donor who offered to $25,000 if we can match it by July 14th. So folks go to the JVP website. There is a donate page if people are interested in helping us to get to that match before July 14th.
Well, basically, that's $25,000 of free money if you can raise $25,000.
That's right. It'll double our money to $50,000.
And so they would go to jewishvoiceforpeace.org.
Exactly right. And you can go there, and actually within the JVP website, you can learn more about the TIAA-CREF campaign and about our work generally. And then, of course, there's a donate button, which you'll be able to see right on the homepage screen. And from there, you can make a donation either online or by check.
And that's by July 14th?
By July 14th in order to help us make this match, yeah.
Okay. And there has been a lot of student divestment news lately. An Israeli cargo ship tried to dock at a California port. I guess that was Oakland. And there was a protest there, wasn't there? You guys didn't have anything to do with that, though, did you?
No, some of our individual members were a part of that, but we did not, we were not part of the organizing for that action. But it was, you know, pretty exciting because the Oakland port, I believe, was the first one that refused to unload South African cargo back
wow.
in the day. And so this was a little bit, you know, parallel to that.
Sure.
And so what they did was there were enough people there that they had to delay the undocking of this Israeli ship for 24 hours. Now, one thing I should clarify in terms of JVP's position, we consider ourselves part of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, and obviously the D in BDS is divestment, and we're doing this divestment campaign from occupation-related industries. The BDS movement has grown because the Palestinians have put out a call from civil society to do BDS, and when you endorse what's called the BDS call, that entails full boycott, divestment, and sanctions on Israel generally, not just on occupation-related industries. So JVP actually has not endorsed that call. At the moment, we're focusing only on occupation-related industries, and that's just, you know, because of where we are as an organization. Certainly, there's many of our closest allies have endorsed the BDS call, and we will fiercely defend anyone who has endorsed the BDS call. You know, it's not anti-Semitic to engage in full boycott. It's not, you know, again, it's, as I was mentioning before, in terms of BDS as a tactic, I think it's a tactic. It's not an end in itself. And people certainly have the right with that to engage in these tactics. And just the way that JVP has chosen to focus is to focus specifically on the occupied territories rather than on Israel as a whole. So, for example, this Port of Oakland action was something that JVP could not endorse because it was focused on Israel on an Israeli ship generally that wasn't necessarily connected to occupation related activities.
Right, I gotcha. Okay, so folks need to go to, if they're interested in this, JewishVoiceForPeace.org. That's all one word, of course, lowercase, no spaces, and you can get much of the information that we're talking about right now from that website. The buttons there are about, you can find out about, which we already covered, the campaigns, which we talked about, news and updates, activist toolkit, organize locally, press and donate. Now, you have, what, 15 chapters across the United States?
We have about 15 chapters. Within a couple of months, we should have 20. I mean, they're just growing at an
wow.
incredible rate. Yeah, and we're starting to have chapters, and we have some university chapters, and we just were contacted by a high school student who wants to start a chapter in her high school, which is pretty exciting. So, you know, we're growing quite fast, but right now it's about 15. Yeah.
So this sounds like Jewish Voice for Peace is taking off. It's getting some critical mass.
I think so, yeah. I mean, you know, we've been, over the years, we've been building our infrastructure, and we've been building our, you know, our membership. But especially, I would say, since the Gaza war in 2008 and 2009, the attack on Gaza, and now we see it again with the flotilla, I think, you know, the narrative about that sort of Israel deserves U.S. support unconditionally and unreservedly, no matter what it does, is starting to change. And the more that Israel breaks international law and violates human rights standards, I think the more that people are willing to face that fact, whether they're Jewish or not Jewish. So, you know, for sure we are. I think you're right. We're taking off right now.
That's great. JewishVoiceForPeace.org, MuzzleWatch.com, and TheOnlyDemocracy.org. Rebecca Vilcomerson, you're doing some terrific work there. And I wish you the best of luck, and I hope that everything turns out the way you want to. And I thank you so much for joining me today and educating our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Okay, bye-bye.